Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an Intelligence Squared U.S. Oxford-style debating live from the Caspary Auditorium at the Rockefeller University. The motion before us tonight is Google violates its Don't Be Evil motto. We will be hearing from two teams of three panelists each in debate. This is a contest. It's a contest of wit and logic and ideas and persuasion. And you, the audience, are the prize in that contest. You are the judges, and your votes will determine who is the winner of the evening. And to that end, we're asking all of you at this point to express your view on the motion now, before having heard any of the actual debate and argument. I'll be sharing those results in a short time after we hear the opening round completed. Now let's let the debating begin. We're going first to argue for the motion, Randall Picker, a professor of commercial law at the University of Chicago Law School and a senior fellow at the Computation Institute of the University of Chicago. Ladies and gentlemen, Randall Picker.
So the resolution before us is that Google violates its Don't Be Evil motto. I think it's important for us to frame that and understand what that means and what it doesn't mean. My piece of this is I'm going to focus on the heart of Google's business, which is their advertising model. And I'm going to focus on the recent deal that was proposed between Google and Yahoo, where Yahoo was going to outsource a large chunk of its search ad business to Google. Advertisers were opposed to the deal. Advertisers believed that the deal, and the core of the deal was, is if you think of search queries, there's a lot of common queries, there's a lot of unusual queries. The deal was going to outsource the long tail, as it were, away from Yahoo to Google. Well, advertisers believed that prices were going to go up because of that. Google's response to that was to say, we run auctions. We don't set prices. Advertisers set prices. We're just middlemen. That's not right, and I think Google knows better. I should say, I'm a Google AdWords advertiser, so if you've not looked at the system, the way it works, you can set a count up very easily, pay $5 to do so. I'm advertising. I thought I should understand how AdWords works, so I'm advertising a paper that I wrote on antitrust and privacy and cloud computing. I'm not sure who the second click has been. But the nature of this is that you bid on keyword terms. If you win the auction, your ads are supposed to show up. Now, Google understands that how you design auctions matters, right? There's a whole field of economics devoted to that. We gave William Vickrey from Columbia a Nobel Prize for that. Google is designing its auctions in a way that takes advantage of its market power. First, Google runs a system involving minimum bids. So cloud neutrality is one of the terms that I'm bidding on. You can run a search on cloud neutrality. I did yesterday. It didn't show up. Indeed, no ad showed up. And indeed, if you look at the statistics, 50% of the time when you run a search on Google and they produce results, the organic search results, there are no ads next to it. So there's a chance for Google to get money there, and yet they're not doing it. Why? Because if very few people are bidding, then I ought to be able to buy it for a very low price. And Google's interest is not served by that. Google wants to make sure that there's a high enough minimum. They've been raising the minimums over time such that Google meaningfully makes money on that. That's an exercise in market power. I should say under current U.S. antitrust law, one of the things I do for a living, I don't think that's illegal. Evil? Well, that's the resolution for the House tonight.
Thank you, Randy Picker. Our next speaker, speaking against the motion in this U.S. Intelligence Squared debate, Jim Harper, who, though arguing on this side, is not somebody unconcerned about privacy. In fact, when he was a consultant for the Department of Homeland Security, he argued vociferously against the introduction of a national identity card on privacy grounds. As director of Information Policy Studios at the Cato Institute, he is our second speaker, speaking against the motion that Google violates its Don't Be Evil motto. Jim Harper.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to find that Google is evil, you have to find that people who cut in line are evil. You have to find that bruised apples are evil. You have to find that flat tires are evil. These things are not evil. Evil is Hitler. Evil is Stalin. Evil is Pol Pot. Evil is Dr. Evil. That's somewhat definitional. Google is not evil. Perhaps that phrase was intended in a sort of let's not be a greasy corporation sense. Even by that standard, Google is not evil. Google is great. Google brings information and empowerment to the masses in ways we couldn't have imagined just a few years ago. Now, there are lots of complaints about Google. Holders of copyrights say, Google's making use of my copyrights and my property. And da-da. In fact, Google is making that material more available and more valuable for copyright holders. This is good. This is not evil. Now, surely Google should avoid censorship. And one of the toughest areas is the question of censorship. But the Chinese people are better off with Google in China slow walking their cooperation with the Chinese government than having no Google in China and leaving China to Baidu and whatever local information sources are fully government approved. Now, some say that Google's monopoly on search gives it so much power that this is inherently somehow evil. Well, Google has a sizable percentage of the search market. I think that's an admission I can make. But Google is a big company that's part of an information big bang that's far bigger. Google's a big player, but the market is much, much bigger than Google. There's a more concerning evil that I want to point you to, and I know none of you indulge this, but some people who have problems with the way products and services are delivered do nothing but complain. That's the evil of apathy. If my colleagues at the far end of the table wish to characterize Google as evil, they should forswear the use of Google products and find the other products, which there are, and use those instead. Google's not evil. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim Harper. Arguing next for the motion, Harry Lewis, a professor of computer science in the School of Engineering and Applied Sciences at Harvard University, who has something to disclose. Though he's arguing this side of the motion, his daughter is actually a Google employee. Harry Lewis.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here tonight. What a great audience. I have a very simple way of stating my case for the motion. If you Google Tibetan independence, you'll get back pointers to some sites that advocate the freedom of Tibet from Chinese rule. You'll also get back some sites that advocate against the freedom of Tibet from Chinese rule. But if you do it inside China, you won't get references. Same thing with human rights, if you Google that, or various spiritual practices. The world looks very different through the window that Google provides in China than through the window on the world that you have available to yourselves here. Now, how did that happen? Well, in 2004, Google was entering the international market. It wanted to be the number one search engine in the world. It started to do business in China. And the Chinese said, we don't want you to show our citizens the world as it really is. We want the Chinese citizens to know the world the way we want them to know the world. And Google said, okay, we'll give them that world instead of the world as it really is. It's a company that does many good works. It's true that that Google as a whole is not evil. I'll grant that, but that's not the question before us. If the question before us was Google is evil, that's what the question would be. That isn't the question. The question is, does it violate what it claims about not being evil? Google didn't choose the lesser of two evils when faced with the Chinese ultimatum. It chose the more profitable of the two evils. And for that reason, you should vote for the proposition that Google is violating its don't be evil motto. Thank you.
We're now halfway through our opening statements. I'm John Donvan, your host and moderator. And speaking next against the motion that Google violates its don't be evil motto, Esther Dyson, who also has some things to disclose, but having met her earlier, I know she'll do it far better than I will. I'll only share the fact that among all of your other activities as an investor in various internet enterprises, you're also currently frequently visiting Russia because you are in training to be a cosmonaut.
So I was going to start by saying that I actually spend a fair amount of time with things I consider evil. And I mean that quite seriously. The old Soviet system, which you still see some vestiges of in Star City where I'm training, I travel a lot. I've seen many ways to be evil. I've examined governments. I'm on the board of the National Endowment for Democracy, and we give grants to dissidents. So that informs my thinking. I'm on the board of 23andMe, which was co-founded by Sergey Brin's wife. I'm on the board of WPP Group, which calls Google its frenemy or its foe. But finally, I'm on the board of Yandex, which competes with Google in Russia, where Yandex has 60% market share and Google has approximately 20. And I believe that Google does not violate its don't be evil motto. The challenge of power is great. The great virtue of the internet is that it erodes power. It sucks power out of the center and takes it to the periphery. It erodes the power of institutions over people while giving to individuals the power to run their own lives. Google is part of that. It's one of these things that shines light on everything. It enables people to find stuff out. It enables them to question what their governments are doing. That doesn't mean that power cannot be abused. I have seen what they're doing in China. And ladies and gentlemen, the reason they're not violating their don't be evil policy is because they're in there and they're engaged. Google, by its very presence and its operation, even if it's incomplete, creates increasing expectations for transparency. It starts people answering questions. And it knows that by doing that, people are going to start asking more questions. So I think Google is doing the right thing by going into China. I don't think they're making that much money there. If they are, that's fine too. But the point of it is they are engaging. So I believe that they do not violate their motto, and I think you should vote against the proposition. Thank you.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. Our next speaker runs a blog, the name of which will tell you a great deal. It is googlizationofeverything.com. Sivavait Hayanathan is Associate Professor of Media Studies and Law at the University of Virginia, and he is also turning his blog ultimately into a book, the kind of book that depends on paper and dead trees, I assume. Siva, the floor is yours.
To my distinguished opponents, I see your Dr. Evil and your Dr. Pol Pot, and I raise you a pope and a poet, specifically Pope Gregory the Great and the great poet Dante Alighieri. Because after all, one of the things we have to figure out here is what do we mean by evil? Well, Google encourages us to think algorithmically. After all, it's built everything that it has on algorithms. One of the simplest forms of algorithms, the if-then statement, or if you prefer, the checklist. Dante offers us such a checklist in the Divine Comedy. The seven deadly sins, luxuria, gula, avaritia, assedia, ira, invidia, and superbia, right? To walk through, I can show you that Google has at times committed every single one of these seven deadly sins. The first, luxuria, which translates as extravagance or lust. I spent a bit of time on the Google campus out in California. They get massages, right? The people who work there get massages. That is corporeal lust of the highest order, or at least for a bunch of geeks about the best they're going to do. Number two, gula, or gluttony. The other thing about the Google campus is they get incredible food, all they can eat, all day. Number three, avaritia, greed. We've already heard from Randy about the greed embodied in the Google-Yahoo advertising deal. That is one of many examples of Google overreaching to corner a market in an effort to maximize its returns. Number four, acedia, sloth. Google itself, its very nature, its very model of advertising is based on free riding. Google makes money off of our work. We blog, we put our cats on skateboards and record them for videos. We do all of this work, and then Google harvests our work, spits it back out at us with almost no actual value added, and what we end up getting is a tremendous amount of money based on free riding, the very definition of sloth. Wrath, ira, wrath. There are a number of high-profile cases of people who have been involved with Google through their AdSense program, through which they've agreed to place ads on their own blogs. Many of these people have found their accounts shut down, their revenue stopped, for reasons that can never be explained, but they did something to violate Google's policies, but they get no feedback and no response and no justice. And then there are hundreds of small companies all around America that have found their ranks decimated, their Google ranks declined significantly because, again, they tried to optimize their results. They were just doing what a company should do. And Google's algorithms, its faceless, soulless algorithms, came at them with wrath. NVIDIA, envy. Google has, over the last few years, engaged in a series of efforts to try to muscle in on the markets of other successful companies. Google has recently tried to push its suite of services that directly compete with Microsoft Office. Of course, they have at various times threatened to muscle out eBay, muscle out PayPal, muscle out Amazon in various ways. Number seven, the one I want to talk about the most, Superbia, pride or hubris. Now, let me remind you of the actual motto of the company. It's not do no evil or don't be evil. It's actually to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible. What could be more hubristic than that? Now, hubris is actually the most serious of the seven deadly sins. One real-world example, let me finish with very quickly, Google Book Search. Google has been trying to scan in 36 million books from libraries around the world in an effort to essentially corner the market on digital book access for a number of years. Early on, 4 years ago, when it started this project or got public with this project, it claimed that everything was cool as far as copyright was concerned. In other words, copyright only applies to mere mortals, not to superhuman, super companies like Google. Well, it turns out Google wasn't right about that. Last month, Google ended up having to settle and wrote a check for $125 million to publishing authors because it turns out they weren't quite as on the ball about copyright as they thought.
Thank you, Siva Vaidyanathan. Our final speaker against the motion, Jeff Jarvis, has had a foot in the what we call the legacy media as a co-founding editor of Entertainment Weekly magazine. He was also a TV critic for TV Guide and for People. But of late, he has been very much of the blogosphere with a blog called BuzzMachine.com, and he also teaches interactive journalism at the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. Jeff Jarvis.
The chiefs of Google have said that the real purpose of the Don't Be Evil pledge is to give employees the license to remind their bosses of this in meetings. So a geek can stand there and say, is that evil? The kind of thing a geek would say. And it's useful. Imagine, ladies and gentlemen, if we had that phrase, don't be evil, chiseled over every door on Wall Street. Would we not have a better world today? In this poisoned process that led to the financial crisis, if just one or two or five or ten people had said, taking poison mortgages or giving them, is that evil? So I think it's important to just recognize that the rule itself is good. So I would like to match the seven deadly sins with eight, I'll beat you, virtues of Google. And let's remember that virtue does leaven evil. We all mess up, right? So virtue matters. So number one, Google has opened up, as my colleagues have said, the world's knowledge to the world, or stipulated China, most of the world's knowledge to most of the world. And that's important. It has changed our very view of facts and knowledge and accuracy. No longer do we end an argument saying, I don't know. We go to Google. Google will tell us. Number two, Google respects the wisdom of the crowd. There's a snobbishness about my old colleagues in big old media. Google doesn't have that. Google learns what it learns because it trusts us. Number three, Google takes the wisdom of the crowd. It knows we have wisdom, and it gives it back to us. It gives us our own knowledge. Google connects people. This is so important. We often are accused online of being antisocial. I think we've become hypersocial. And so I think the importance of Google connecting people cannot be underestimated. Admit it. How many of you have searched Google for an old girlfriend or boyfriend? Oh, come on, you liars. But young people will stay connected to their friends for the rest of their lives. Imagine the impact that will have on friendship and society, and Google is the mechanism that makes that happen. Five, Google creates platforms. It is a platform that enables us to create. A recent poll said 80% of Americans think they have a book in them. We should be glad that most don't come out. But we have seen in Google that it is an age of creation, and Google creates the platforms, the tools to let us create, the means to let us pay for that. I think that's very, very important. Six, Google does have ads. If you want to compare, my dear colleagues on the other side, the view of Google toward its advertising structure, compare it to a monopoly newspaper, which set the price, which set its own rules, which allowed you to only do so many things with their space. Well, no, we can do what we want with our ads. We can start whole businesses with it. We can create movements with it. Seven, Google.org, the foundation started by Google, is supported by 1% of the equity and 1% of the profits of the company. And it is trying to solve, with hubris, the problem of energy and global warming in one fell swoop. Finally, I want to say that Google teaches us to understand our new world in new ways. And if we are too critical of Google, I think we give up that opportunity to see this new world and understand it through the lens of Google. In this new economy, I don't think the companies will be built anymore by huge capital making huge acquisitions. They will be built as Google has through networks and platforms. Google is a model to us all. Our world is better off because we have Google. So please have a moment of decency and vote against the motion.
That concludes our opening round, and in a minute or two, I'm going to turn to you and ask whoever is there seething to respond to something you've heard that just outrages you to do so. And we will also shortly be turning to questions from the audience. But I want to restate our motion. Google violates its "Don't Be Evil" motto. And as you know, when you came in this evening, we asked you to vote for your opinion on this motion. And we have the numbers now, which I'm about to reveal, numbers which will appear on Google in perpetuity from this moment forward. Before the debate, 21% of you agreed with the motion, 31% of you were against the motion, and 48% of you were undecided. And that 48% is very valuable. It's one of the largest undecided votes we've seen so far this season. It may be the largest. And again, reminding you that this is a contest for changing minds, so that 48% is a very, very large pie to cut up. And we will be asking you to vote a little bit later on again in the evening. But first, I want to turn to you, and I'll count to three to see if a hand goes up, if anybody... Okay. Harry Lewis, motion.
I'd just like to point out that our opposition has tried both tactics to persuade you to vote against the motion. They've said that evil means Hitler, Pol Pot, and the worst gulags of the Soviet Union. And they've also said, they mean by evil something that's a much higher standard. Now, I would like to think, and I would like to ask the opposition if they don't think that when Google made their motion, "Don't be evil," that they were not holding them to the standard that they shouldn't be as evil as Pol Pot, Hitler, and the worst of the Soviet Union, and anything better than that, they would get a pass on the "Don't be evil."
Jim Harper, take that.
Granted.
Jim Harper speaking for the motion.
Now, the question is as to the motto, and I spoke to both versions, the actual genuine meaning of the word evil, but what they may have meant, which is the corporate greed kind of thing. Greed, which as Siva pointed out, drives them wrongly, apparently, to compete with eBay and Microsoft and Amazon. That's not an indictment of a company to say that they're competing with others, trying to serve consumers better than with whom they compete. By any standard, Google is not violating the "Don't Be Evil" policy that they put forward.
Jim, your teammate Esther Dyson.
Yeah, the purpose of this motto is that these guys are smart and they are aware of the possibility of evil. The other thing I'd like to point out is that Google, using Google is voluntary. Pol Pot, all these dictators, they were not voluntary. So they're using their power to do good and to make the world more transparent.
Steve, you want to jump in?
Yeah, Jim, you've fallen into my trap. So you've fallen into my trap by citing the fact that every company should be expected to compete and should, in fact, probably be extravagant, be gluttonous, be greedy, be slothful, be wrathful, and be envious, and, of course, hubristic.
Every
company
should,
because that's what companies should do. They should compete. They should win. They should crush.
No, they should win. They should not crush.
Siva, you've fallen into your own bog.
And by that I say, it is for the companies to violate the seven deadly sins and not to pretend they don't. And it is for popes and poets to warn us against it.
Randy Picker. Let me bring in Randy Picker.
I hate to be a textualist, but I brought the registration statement with me, right? Let's see what it says. Don't be evil. We believe strongly that in the long term we will be better served as shareholders and in all other ways by a company that does good things for the world, even if we forego some short-term gains. The question is, when does Google, faced with a conflict between what's good for the world, sacrifice its own interests? I don't think it's doing that.
Jeff
Let's
Jarvis?
Let's look at Yahoo. Yahoo was the last old structure, the last old media company. Google is a new company. Eric Schmidt was asked recently by Jim Cramer how much they could make by putting ads on their homepage. Some untold billions of dollars, he said. They chose not to do that. Is that good versus evil? I actually argue it is, because Google recognizes that it's not an end like Yahoo. It's not an old media company. It's a new media company that gets us to what we want to get to. That itself is a virtue. I think the problem we're having here is defining the fall from grace. And if we all define it the way you are trying to hold Google, then we're all going to hell. Because
this has been a very theological evening so far.
That word evil does it.
And so I think that Google recognizes that life is a beta. Google puts out products and says they're not done yet. They are wrong. They're incomplete. Please help us fix them. Google is not trying to say that they are ultimately absolutely virtuous.
Siva.
So Jeff has compared Google to Wall Street firms and said, wouldn't it be great if Wall Street firms had that motto chiseled in their buildings? He's compared Google to newspapers that have local monopolies and pointed out that newspapers, of course, fix prices on advertising. And now he's compared Google to Yahoo. None of that matters. It does not matter that any other company behaves badly or behaves in an evil way, because none of those companies ever were foolish enough to chisel such a motto into their buildings or their financial filing statements. Now, that the fact is Google has set its own standard and has not met its own standard.
It has set its own standard, and I believe it has met it. It has aspired to do good. It has, as I said, engaged in an evil world to make it better. To me, that's the opposite of evil.
Harry Lewis, do you think Google actually meant it when it said that it wanted to commit no evil, or was that the most cynical declaration of all time?
It was an aspirational statement.
They meant it.
And just as many of us make promises that we have to acknowledge we are unable to keep, Google has been unable, virtuously and continuously, to keep its aspirational promise. I think it's a good thing that Google made that aspirational promise. The question is whether it ever violates it, and the answer is plainly that it does.
Esther, you were talking about China. Harry says going to China, and essentially he's saying collaborating with the regime, it was an act of evil, and you're arguing that a little access is a good thing.
No, a little access is a good thing, but I'm arguing something more important. It's not collaborating with the regime. It is infiltrating the regime. It is spreading information within China. It's exposing people to the virtues of knowledge. It's changing their expectations. Long run, you will see that Google is going to change China.
Jeff Jarvis.
Even if you wish that Google did differently in China, and frankly, I do. I wish they used their power. The important thing is to realize the basis upon which they made this decision. And they used their Don't Be Evil pledge as a basis to debate and decide this. They made their decision not out of pure greed, but out of the belief, agree with it or disagree with it, but out of the belief that they were trying to do good.
Let's go to a question halfway up.
I confess to being the father of a daughter who works at Google also. I would like to ask the panel, where do the shareholders figure into this? And don't they have a voice in how the company behaves, or should they?
Esther.
I think Google feels, and I agree, that shareholders matter, but not a lot. If their interests are short-term profits, they can buy and sell and go away.
But Harry Lewis, I think you are almost arguing in your China argument that you're disappointed that shareholders did not protest.
Oh, I think, yes, I think that Google's international reputation would have soared had they stood firmly against the Chinese censorship.
It would have been
in their long-term interests, as many of the other measures that Google has made had.
Jim Harper?
As to the shareholder question, this is very much like the question of people who complain about Google but don't do anything about it. Shareholders are free to sell, and they would if Google was evil.
Siva?
Someone's been selling Google's shares.
They've been selling everybody's.
Well, yeah. Exactly. But people have been selling Google shares for reasons they don't disclose, right? It's a simple signal they send to the market. Nonetheless, remember that a publicly traded company that's doing very well can afford to hold out a motto like, don't be evil. When things get tough, and as Harry's brought up, they have to make a decision between revenue and egalitarianism, they're going to pick revenue, as they have every time.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores.
Okay, just a time check on where we are. We're about halfway through the head-to-head discussion. Just a reminder, I'm John Donvan, your host and moderator of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where the motion is Google violates its Don't Be Evil motto. We have three debaters for and against, and we are at this point taking questions from the audience, and we have a question from the gentleman in the center.
Right, so my name's Larry Lessig. I'm a professor at Stanford, and Stanford gets lots of money from Google for some reasons. I don't know why. But first a comment to Siva and then a question for Harry. The comment for Siva is, it's not actually true to say Google paid $125 million for something that it originally claimed it could do for free. So what it's done is just bought a right that before it never claimed. This is not
for people who are unaware of the settlement, could you take three sentences to explain?
Long sentences? I'm a lawyer. So,
yeah. But I think you can do it. You're talking about the publishing.
Right. So Google originally claimed it had the right to scan these 18 or 36 million books.
One sentence?
And at least make available snippets of the books that were still in copyright,
comma,
but out of print, period. The settlement gives Google the right to display 20% of a book, plus if a user chooses to then give user access to the full book if they pay.
I don't want to argue that making this material available is an example of evil. What was evil was the hubris in arguing that they could fly above the basics of copyright when they do it. But I do want to point out that of the $125 million that Google willfully paid in the settlement, they basically were paying the authors and the publishers $91 million to settle the damages that were claimed by the authors and publishers. The extra services that Google is now providing will take up $34 million of that $125 million. So, in fact, the settlement was a concession that they probably had flown too close to the
Randy
sun.
Randy Picker wants to add to that.
So don't focus on the dollars. Focus on a different issue. So the basic structure of copyright law is subject to fair use. You have to get permission. Google has done something incredibly clever, evil, I don't know, in the settlement, which is by turning it into an opt-out class action, and now I just said a bunch of legal words that you're not going to like, right? They've effectively changed the default position with regard to how copyright's consent system works.
But bottom line, for those of us who aren't lawyers and don't know the terms of the debate, did Google serve its own interests in this deal?
Very much so, I think. Maybe the
but
public
also,
interest at the same time.
It also served the interests of people who want to read books that were no
and
longer
authors
available.
To write them. Yes.
And authors to get payments.
We're going to go to another question up on the halfway up.
So here's my question. If Google is willing to limit search to get market share, what would limit them from disclosing personal search information of citizens to gain or maintain a market share?
Jeff Jarvis.
With all respect, I think you're showing little faith in mankind. It's not Google you have a problem with, but man. Yes, even in a financial organization, there can be someone who would ask the question and force the issue, is this evil? And similarly in Google, there is not only that, but there is also the self-interest that Google does have a brand and a reputation. And if Google messes with us, we can use the internet and find ourselves on Google to get Google back. And we will.
Question all the way in the back.
Hi, Kevin Williamson, National Review, which may explain the slightly Thomistic tenor of this question. But this is really for those who are arguing for the motion. Aren't you arguing that Google is, in fact, violating a different motto, which would say don't do evil, versus a motto that says don't be evil? Every business makes some sort of compromise. Every business makes a mistake. Everybody who's ever paid a dollar in taxes has made a compromise with evil at some point.
That was it's staying theological, and it was a great question. Well, Harry Lewis,
I was waiting for this Clintonian or Clintonesque moment where the debate turned to the question of what the meaning of be is.
The question calls for an assessment of the totality of the company, not picking out individual instances where you don't like what Google does, and we've made cases that many of those are falsities. The totality of the company invited this discussion, first of all, by having this motto, and now exposes itself to this kind of discussion. I think it holds up well, given all that.
Well,
I mean, being evil means being evil in your heart, and they...
Well...
Harry Lewis.
Esther, if that's what they meant, they could have said it. They didn't say... They set the standard
Unlike lawyers, they're brief and succinct.
Question down front.
Having lived for 20 years under communism in Bulgaria, and having been listening to the Voice of America and Free Europe, which were broadcasted by the U.S. mainly, according to what you say, the U.S. should not have actually radio-transmitted Voice of America because our authorities were actually making noise on the same frequency. But I can tell you, if we didn't have access to this little information, we today would have not been members of NATO or the European Union.
No. There isn't a parallel between the United States Voice of America and Google. Google is a business, and the issue for Google only came up because they wanted to set up shop inside China, have employees there, run their servers there, and do business with inside China. And there are rules inside China for how businesses have to operate. And my contention is that Google made the wrong decision in deciding to do business in a country whose demands were so inconsistent with their fundamental mission in life.
I want to go to, in a little bit of time we have left, to get in two more questions up in the far right.
One of my questions about China was just addressed. My other question is about the Google Chrome browser, which allows it to collect personal advertising information. I was wondering how both sides of the motion felt that it could use this as a force for good or for evil.
Is there, Esther, a good use of the collection of personal information?
Sure. People keep talking as if users' information ought to be secret. People are now going online voluntarily sharing it. They love comparing themselves. They like to compare their music tastes. They like to know whether they're hot or not. I like to compare my genome with other people's genomes. The ability to know more about yourself, to share it with other people, that's what mirrors are for, and they're bestsellers.
I'll show you my genome if you show me yours. Our last question from right down front.
Do we have any way of knowing what Google's goals are in making these decisions? And if we don't, do we have any way of evaluating whether or not they're evil?
Siva.
We each have the capacity of judging whether any particular action is evil. I, of course, am appealing to authority, one of the classic fallacies, the authority being Dante and Pope Gregory. But I didn't mean to do so quite so facetiously. I do mean to say that all of the things that big, successful corporations should do tend to trample on the canon of good and evil that we have been swimming in. And in fact, it's hypocritical for a company to say that it will hold itself to such a high standard. It's perfectly reasonable for Google to do almost everything it has done as a profit-making venture. But the real question is this standard itself being undermined by its very actions? Is the fact that it set this high standard for itself ultimately foolish?
We're going to move along now to final statements. This is the last chance that each of the panelists will have really to lock you in. They'll each get 2 minutes to speak. But before we do that, I want to remind you of where we were in terms of the numbers. Before the debate, when we polled you on the motion that Google violates its "Don't Be Evil" motto, 21% of you were for the motion, 31% were against, and a very large 48% were undecided. And we are going to begin with Jim Harper, who is the Director of Information Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, speaking against the motion.
Well, first I want to congratulate and thank our opponents in this debate. They had a very, very difficult tour ahead of them. They did the best they could, and I congratulate them on what meager success they had in their arguments. Important point. Google invited this conversation. Google deserves your credit for having invited this conversation. And as Jeff pointed out, inviting this conversation internally as well. There is a culture there that is essentially good. There are decisions they have made that I have openly criticized. I disagree with some of the things Google does. The totality of what Google does and the totality of what Google is not evil. It is good. And I think you should support opposing the motion. You should oppose the motion. Because Google is, at its heart, a good company that provides extraordinary services to the public, that makes extraordinary amounts of information available to the public, is working around the world to make information available. And the slights that have been heaped upon it by our opponents do not overcome their burden. We think, and we hope you think, that Google is a good company. Please oppose the motion.
Thank you, Jim Harper. In making his summarizing statement for the motion, Randy Picker, professor at the University of Chicago Law School. Randy Picker.
Well, I'm both a lawyer and an economist, and as an economist, I think the issue before us is what I'll call marginal evil, or incremental evil. I think that's where we are with regard to Google. That's the question. When are they creating evil that they don't need to create? When are they making a choice that we should understand to be one that benefits Google and hurts the market, hurts other participants in that market? Where I started was something that went to the heart of their business model. This isn't a sideshow. This is not an experiment. This is at the heart of the way Google does business. And what they are doing there is doing exactly what we see monopolists doing since the Sherman Act was passed in 1890. They exercise market power. That's what Google is doing. We've heard a lot of discussion. I haven't heard actually anything about that. I think that's because it's not possible to refute that, and I don't think it's actually transparent to most people how they're doing it. And when someone asks Google whether they're doing that, Google says, we're running auctions, we don't have power, notwithstanding our market share is 65% in the United States. That is acting in a way that is being evil.
Thank you, Randall Picker. Summarizing against the motion, Esther Dyson, an investor in information technology companies. Esther Dyson.
The thing doesn't say don't be incrementally evil. When you have to sort of get down to these fine distinctions, I think it's clear you're losing. So I would encourage you guys to join the winning side and vote against this unsupportable proposition. Google is not violating its don't be evil motto. They are doing good. They're opening up the world. They're giving people more choices. They're giving people awareness of their choices. They're increasing transparency and people's personal autonomy. Mostly what they are doing, and the thing for which I give them the most credit, is they're eroding the power and limiting the ability of those in power to abuse that power by shining light and by encouraging people to change their expectations, to start asking for answers. They're giving everyone the ability to watch the watchers in this increasingly transparent world. So please join us, the winning side, and vote no.
Thank you, Esther Dyson. Summarizing his position for the motion, Harry Lewis, professor of computer science at Harvard University.
Well, not everyone, Esther. They're not giving that power to everyone. Evil was Google's terms. We didn't set the terms of this debate. The Intelligence Squared people didn't set the terms of this debate. Google set the terms of this debate by putting that grand proposition out there, don't be evil. Some of the things they're doing, they themselves know aren't right. They themselves would prefer not to be censoring search results in China. And they have allied themselves with other corporations into a new consortium that is, and they've pledged themselves to try to lift this restriction over the coming years. Now, that's, you know, they're to be respected for that, as they are to be respected for all of the other enlightening things that the other side keeps pointing out they are doing. But it's not a proposition about, on aggregate, are they 10% more good than they are evil. The question is, do they violate? Violate is an active verb. That's let's not parse. Do they violate their don't be evil motto? And I would just repeat that the construction of censorship tools is an act of evil. Thank you.
Okay. The motion in this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate is Google violates its don't be evil motto. And summarizing his position against the motion is Jeff Jarvis, director of the International Journalism Program at the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. Jeff Jarvis.
This debate, I believe, is not about Google, it is about us. And it is perhaps a bit of an indictment of us. You know, the problem we have in America is that we love and nurture success until you become too successful. And when you become too successful, we become suspicious of you. We even wonder whether you couldn't do this any other way besides being evil. Perhaps you do it by being smart, by being good, by being generous, by being innovative. I think that's what Google has done here. I think those are all virtues. And our risk as a nation, by looking the gift geek in the mouth, not a pleasant visual, I'll admit, is that we lose this lesson and we lose this value and we lose this tremendous gift that Google gives us. Finally, because I am a fan of Google, I am a fan of the wisdom of the crowd. I believe you are wise. So I am confident that you will vote against the motion.
Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. And finally, summarizing his position for the motion, Siva Vaidyanathan, Associate Professor of Media Studies and Law at the University of Virginia. Siva.
Lucifer did not fall because he wanted to be bad. Like Jessica Rabbit, he was drawn that way. In fact, he fell. He fell because he was trying to be great. Now, I firmly believe that companies should be companies, that governments should be governments, that saints should be saints, that sinners should be sinners, that gods should be gods, and devils should be devils. The claims of corporate responsibility are basically cynical marketing ploys, disguised as something great and good. The fact is, Google grew as big and successful as it has, not only because it is great, and it is, but because it claimed to be good. Google never bought a Super Bowl ad. To my knowledge, Google never bought an ad, right? Google got big because in the early days, a whole lot of us who were very active on the web were disgusted by the status quo, and we gravitated to Google, not only because it seemed to satisfy our needs, but because it satisfied our need to avoid evil, and the evil in those days was number one, Microsoft, and number two, Yahoo. And in both cases, Google was able to gain our loyalty. It was a cynical marketing ploy, one that in the long run, it will not, and in fact has not, lived up to. People really believed it was not evil. Many people still believe it does not do evil. The fact is, companies should make money, and the rest of us should beware. So please vote for the proposition.
Thank you, Siva Vaidyanathan. And I'd just like to ask for a round of applause as we conclude the talking portion of the debate. And now, the moment of truth. The motion before us was Google violates its don't be evil motto. Coming in, 21% of you were for the motion, 31% were against, and 48% were undecided. After the debate, 47% of you agree with the motion. 47% of you are against the motion, and 6% were undecided. 47% to 47% looks like a tie. However, the side that changed most minds is the side for the motion, who moved 26% of you.
versus 16% for the side against. Thank you to our panelists, and thank all of you for joining us.
This Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, presented by the Rosencrantz Foundation, was held on the campus of the Rockefeller University. Robert Rosencrantz is chairman, Dana Wolf is executive producer, Maureen McMurray is radio producer, Damon Whitmore is the audio engineer, and I'm your host, John Donvan. For more information or to purchase tickets to future events, visit www.iq2us.org. To hear the full unedited version or to sign up for the Intelligence Squared podcast, visit npr.org/IntelligenceSquared. Intelligence Squared is distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.